Dear woman's beautiful face quickly twisted into an angry sneer. She stamped her feet and snorted. Her mouth moved, but she could not speak. A cold wind suddenly sprang up, scattering the leaves in the gully. Koshkalika was afraid, and he turned to run. Leaves rattled all around him, and he heard a whistling snort, the sound deer made when they were alarmed. Looking back, he saw a deer standing where the deer woman had been. It was a female blacktail, with a dark stripe across its face. He had never seen such a black stripe across the face of any deer. Koshkalika noticed something else. The deer woman's lodge was gone. The deer lowered its head to charge. Koshkalika put an arrow on his bowstring and raised his bow to take aim. The deer spun and disappeared into a line of sumac. Never again in his life would Koshkalika see such a deer, although he would always be on the lookout for it, for her. He never saw the deer woman again for as long as he lived. Koshkalika returned to the hunting camp and told his companions what had happened. He told them he had seen the deer woman. They believed him, because there was something different about him. There was a look of strength in his eyes. "We must build a sweat lodge and pray," he told them. So they did. A low, round lodge made of willow and covered with deer and elk hides. That night they heated stones and made a sweat to purify themselves and to pray for good things to happen. In the days that followed, their hunting was good. It was very good. Soon they had plenty of meat to take home. In time, Koshkalika courted a young woman from another village and won her love. They married and had a son and a daughter. Over the years, not only was he the finest, most skillful hunter to come along in many a generation, but he was also a stalwart warrior and a leader of men. Men were willing to follow him on the warpath or on the hunt because he had a calm manner and strength of spirit. And when he was an older man, he took his place on the council of old men, and there he was known for his wisdom and good advice. The deer woman couldn't fool Koshkalika because of one thing, respect. Koshkalika loved and respected his grandmother, and because he did, he remembered her words during that awful moment when the deer woman almost took him. If he hadn't respected his grandmother, he would not have remembered what she had told him. Perhaps the deer woman doesn't appear to lone hunters anymore, or perhaps she does in other ways. Times have changed for us, so maybe she's changed her ways too, and comes after our spirits in other ways. I can tell you one thing. You're never too old to remember the things your grandmother taught you. It's never too late to respect the ways of our elders. It's never too late to remember what grandmother said. Remembering respect. Luther Standing Bear, Lakota, and one of the first Native American writers to be published around 1900, talked about respect as an essential ingredient for balanced interaction among all living things. According to him, the Lakota had developed a respect for the earth and all forms of life because all were a necessary part of the physical environment. He suggested that some people, and he was politely implicating whites, had lost respect for animals. His biggest concern was that humans who lost respect for animals would soon lose respect for their own kind as well. Unfortunately, human history is replete with horrifying examples of mindless cruelty that bear out Standing Bear's fears: the Spanish Inquisition, the African slave trade, the Salem witch trials, the Black Hole of Calcutta, the Wounded Knee Massacre of 1890, the Bataan Death March, the Holocaust, the My Lai Massacre of 1968, and so on. I suppose that it could be argued that there were many other contributing factors in each of these events, but the absence of respect was certainly an exacerbating factor. Respect is a close relative of tolerance, and both go a long way to prevent and alleviate the negative interactions between and among people. Respect was a member of each Lakota household during the free-roaming buffalo hunting days on the northern plains. After the arrival of the horse, the average Lakota teepee, which means they lived there, was 16 to 18 feet across. Its overall shape was conical. The floor plan was slightly more egg-shaped than circular, and it had only one room. The basic components were 20 to 22 soft, tanned, and de-haired bison hides sewn together, which formed the covering. It was supported by 16 to 20 long, slender poles arranged and lashed together in a cone-shaped framework. At the top was a smoke hole with directional flaps, and at the bottom edge was the only door, usually faced to the east. The teepee was perfectly suited to the nomadic lifestyle. Its care and construction and disassembly and reassembly were the exclusive responsibility of the women. They could take it down in less than half an hour and needed no more time than that to put it up at the next encampment. Inside of this wonderfully appropriate dwelling lived, on the average, 7 people. Many households consisted of 3 generations living in the same dwelling. The use and arrangement of space was critical to the family's harmony, since this was a one-room structure. Amazingly, the disputes over space were rare because of one simple and essential presence: respect. Each member of the household took no more space than he or she needed, and with the possible exception of the children, was careful not to encroach on someone else's space. There was also a simple way to handle the issue of privacy. If a non-Lakota observer was a fly on a wall inside the Lakota teepee as the family was preparing for bed, he or she would probably think that the people in the teepee were rudely ignoring one another. As a point of fact, they would have been, but not out of rudeness. Since there were no interior walls to provide privacy, people politely ignored one another. Frequently, for example, it would seem that the younger husband and wife were totally unaware of the grandparents and vice versa, but they were simply affording each other privacy. The children, of course, had access to all the adults in the household, but they were nonetheless learning the proper etiquette for a necessary aspect of family life, an etiquette firmly rooted in respect. 2 significant historical events are proof that respect for others, even one's enemies, is certainly possible. The first occurred in 1851, and the second 15 years later in 1866. The Oregon Trail had been firmly established by 1850 as a primary white immigrant route from Missouri to Oregon, a trek of some 2,000 miles. From its jumping-off point in western Missouri, it followed old established travel corridors through Kansas, Nebraska, Wyoming, Idaho, and finally Oregon. Over its 20-year history, 350,000 people would use it. Through northwest Nebraska and southeast Wyoming, the trail was in Lakota territory, but along its entire route, the white immigrants were fearful of Indian attacks. Primarily because of this concern, United States peace commissioners called for a treaty meeting at Fort Laramie in southeastern Wyoming, and invited many of the tribes from the northern plains. In the spring of 1851, many of the invitees showed up, including the Lakota, Cheyenne, Arapaho, Mandan, Hidatsa, Arikara, Crow, Shoshone, and Blackfeet. The Lakota, Cheyenne, and Arapaho had by then formed a strong alliance and had clashed at one time or another with all the other tribes. There was especially bad blood between the Lakota and Crow, and between the Lakota and Shoshone as well. But for the entire 40 days or so of the treaty gathering, there were no clashes. Old enemies set aside their differences for the time being and had a good time at the expense of the United States and its peace commissioners. The peace commissioners were wholly ignorant of the dynamics and factors that were part and parcel of centuries-old interrelationships of the tribes of the Northern Plains. but they knew just enough to be fearful of outbreaks of fighting. Consequently, they paternalistically admonished the attendees against fighting of any kind.